Public input in the morning, and we have several people who've signed up. I always go through the commission rules to remind everyone. The commission offers each citizen 3 minutes to present your views. I'll call you up two at a time. So, and once you've made your statement, we'd like you to return to your seat in the audience so that I can call someone else up. You're provided 3 minutes. When you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks. That means if you're in mid-sentence, you can complete your sentence, but don't take too much time doing it. Okay. The first two people are Leland Miyawaki and Wayne Klein. If you'd come forward. Okay, Mr. Miyawaki, welcome.
Back again. Leland Miyawaki representing Occupy Skagit. And here we go again, because still we haven't heard anything about our spring catch and release season since our last meeting. And, you know, the other guys are going to have, Wayne will have talk about escapement and numbers and things like that. And I don't know that. I'm just a retired advertising guy, so we just make our things up. But here's what I do know. One of the guys in the group, Kerry Stratton, is fighting cancer. And one of his great wishes is that he could fish the Skagit one more time in the spring. And that's something that I'd like to see happen just for him. And I like to fish the peninsula. And it's so doggone crowded. So if I open up the Skagit, then maybe some of the crowd will be spread out and the wealth will be spread out and I'll be able to go fish on the peninsula finally. And here's the, I think is a real good one, reason for opening a Skagit catch and release season in the spring. And that would be that our friends in Arlington and Edmonton are just about to see more people over there in those 3 months. So I think that's a pretty good point. Now, at last time we talked, there was a problem. I thought it was a done deal. And the issue only was
we're going to try to...
Yeah, I'm not going to use the other mic. No, you're fine. You can use that one.
You can use that. So we should just use this one mic? It's better. Okay, one at a time. We'll just call everyone up one at a time. Okay, Mr. Klein, go ahead.
Okay, good morning, commissioners, director. I just want to say a couple things here real quick. Last time we were here, Mr. Carpenter referred to our group as purists, and I think that's real nice. I appreciate that, but I think a better description of our group would be stewards. And I can tell you right now that if we get this season back, everybody wants to take care of it. We're just as concerned about overcrowding and catching too many fish and all that stuff. We had a great return again this last spring, over 9,000 fish. And I would like to remind you that none of those fish came out of a hatchery. They were absolutely free. They did not cost the department a single penny. They're absolutely free. The hardest part is done. I've tried every shortcut I can think of to try and get this season going. I talked to Bob Turner. He keeps sending me back to you guys. You guys have to initiate this basin management plan that we need. And once we get that, then I think the ball starts moving forward. I don't know if a plan's been started or where it's at or who's doing it, it'd be nice. We do have some other ideas to facilitate this season. As Leland mentioned, we're willing to pay more, do more. I noticed there's a computer right here. Leland was using his phone with that kind of, with today's technology, if the feds want to monitor this fishery, they can do it almost in real time. You could have the wild people that you guys have hired set up a website. We can report angler fish encounters at the end of each day. Emergency closure if we're catching too many. There's a way to get it done. The hardest part, the fish are here. We had over 9,000. Everyone talks about the glory days of the 80s, and they want to wait until we get back to those numbers. And I tell them, we're there. We're already there. There's no reason to wait. The fish are here. So anyway, it just seems like I have a hard time trying to navigate through bureaucratic stuff, but I'm doing it for this. So I guess that's all I got to say. Please help us. Thank you.
Commissioner Carpenter might have something to say in reply.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah. I'm very sensitive to this. Request that's been put out there and the way you guys have positioned yourself to be very, very positive and very clear about your respect for these fish and this river system. I guess from the bureaucracy side, I don't have an explanation for that. So I guess I'm going to, at this point, we had a discussion yesterday, Chair and I and some other commissioners, about the pressure that's been put on the coastal steelhead rivers is scary. And we've got a river, a huge river like the Skagit River, that's got a good abundance of wild fish now. And I think it would be meaningful if we could try and craft some opportunity that would reduce some of the pressure on the coastal streams. And frankly, I live there and I'm in the boat business, but that's not going to help me. But I want to see people on the river sometime again in my lifetime. So I guess I'd ask Phil, what is the impediment? What's the shortcut here?
Director Anderson.
Thanks, Commissioner Carpenter. Let's first of all, I think we all know that Puget Sound steelhead are listed under the Endangered Species Act as threatened. And having a directed fishery on a listed species is not an easy thing to get to. If we reflect on where we are with salmon in Puget Sound, we need to have that Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan approved by NOAA, which provides us the permit under which this body can authorize a fishery. We are in the same situation with steelhead in Puget Sound. Now, the Skagit is an exception, I think, from my perspective, in that we are seeing healthy returns of wild fish to the Skagit. And at our last conversation on this topic, we acknowledged around the table that we have what appears to be a healthy returning. We would have to be very cautious. I think everybody that's testified here recognizes that if we can get to a point where we have a catch and release fishery, and there will be some take associated with that, there will be some low level of mortalities, and it is as a result of that that we need to have a permit from NOAA in order to do that. Mr. Klein referenced the bureaucratic stuff. That's one term for it. I've got others, and we're tied up in a bureaucracy of process to work our way through to get us to the point where we have a permit issued by NOAA Fisheries to this agency and the tribes if we were going to have a fishery. I can already hear the boos, but we met with NOAA in August and talked about because right now we have been going down the path where we would have a single harvest management plan, and under some circumstances, and Skagit's probably the outlier, where we would propose a permit for a very low level of take that would be associated with a catch and release fishery. We talked about whether to do a single environmental impact statement under NEPA in order to get that harvest management plan approved, thereby providing us a permit to authorize a fishery, or whether to break the Skagit apart and do a separate EIS, do a separate process, rather than keeping it lumped with the balance of the river systems in Puget Sound. Here come the boos. They told us that in order to draft the EIS and to go through the scoping process and get the EIS to the point where we would have a conclusion on the EIS, which is a precursor to getting the harvest management plan approved, we're looking at 2 years. 2 years. I say with a bit of a caveat that I can't say this with 100% certainty, but I believe we have agreement with the tribes, our co-managers, to separate the Skagit and do it under a separate process than the full grouping of all the steelhead runs within that population segment. So we had a follow-up meeting with tribal and state technical staff after that meeting with NOAA because we wanted to make sure we understood what the framework was that NOAA would be looking for us from us in terms of a harvest management plan, and then get our staffs together and start analyzing and pulling the data together that would be needed to move this process forward. So that's where we are. We've had that discussion at the policy level with NOAA. We all know that we need a permit in order to put this body in a position where they could consider and authorize a catch-and-release fishery. I say 90% because I can't say with absolute certainty that each one of the tribes that has a say in this has agreed to pull it off and do it independently, but I think we're there. And that sends us off down this EIS road of developing, of doing the scoping, putting together the reasonable and prudent alternatives, doing the analysis on those, going through the public comment process, and then coming back, getting the EIS approved, and then we'd be in a position where we'd have a permit that would then put this body in the position of considering authorizing a catch-and-release fishery in the Skagit.
Do I understand you to be saying that we would also have to have a similar harvest management plan as we do with Puget Sound Chinook? And could we do that at the same time as developing the EIS?
The EIS is what is it's the same process we're going down for that we went down and that we're currently about to go down with Salmon in terms of we will need to do an EIS and go through that NEPA process to get a multi-year harvest management plan approved. We would do the same thing here for the Skagit that we're doing there. What we're stuck with right now in the salmon world is we're doing these one-year extensions because we haven't gone through that process that is required under NEPA in terms of the environmental impact statements to get us to a point where we have a multi-year plan that authorizes then certain levels of take on listed species.
Yeah, what I was asking is, can we develop the plan that authorizes a specific take at the same time we're developing the EIS?
It's kind of all one and the same. It's kind of the same thing. That plan that you're talking about is what is going through the environmental impact statement process.
Okay. Commissioner Keeney?
Chair. So I was just curious, Phil, so have we hit the go button, or are we still in the wait mode trying to decide?
I would say the go button was initiated when the tribes in the state met with NOAA Fisheries in August. What I can't say right now is that we're sprinting. And there's a finite amount of staff within NOAA. I'm not trying to make excuses. It's just, it is what it is. There's a finite number of staff within NOAA. They have a finite capacity, as do we. And we're serious about moving this along, but there's a lot of other things that we're doing, too, that are using the same staff. So we're going to go as fast as we can, but I wouldn't want you to think that, you know, this one has a higher priority than some of our others, equal standing, meaning that we're trying to move a bunch of things at the same time.
Including the HGMPs?
Including the HGMPs, including the Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan.
100-plus HGMPs?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could use some help from the sport fishing community regarding the prioritization of the work that we undertake with NOAA, it seems to me.
Well, we met on with representatives of the sport fishing community on it, not with the focus specifically on the Skagit steelhead question, just last week, and we but that had to do with HGMPs and prioritizing HGMP. So we're already in that process. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is another piece of work. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I appreciate, Phil, your explanation. I just want to say that having been a stakeholder for 25 years, I know how frustrating it is when you're trying to promote something that you believe in and it appears to meet the appropriate conservation requirements. So it's something that I want to see done in my career, and we'll keep working on it. NOAA is inundated and excuse-ridden and hardworking, but they got a lot on their plate. So I'll just say that because I know it's true, because I was one of the groups that met with them a week ago. So I think Phil's message is there, and I think we're on the course to get it. Now, is that reasonable or even considerable? A consideration that could be done by spring of 2015 to have a fishery this spring?
You recall the EIS process takes 2 years.
Is there an expedited EIS process or?
Not that I've ever seen in my lifetime.
And it becomes more vulnerable to lawsuits if you try to cut corners and.
You want to have. We don't want to get caught up in a process where we're vulnerable to a process foul.
Yeah.
I mean, we see what happens. I mean, the Wild Fish Conservancy lawsuit was all about, had nothing to do, in my view, with the merits of our hatchery program. It has to do with the procedure and process and whether or not we have a permit to operate those facilities, right? So as we move forward, we want to build as bulletproof of plan as we can, so that when we do this, and I will say to all of you here and those that are back home in the Skagit area that are interested in this, without your approach and your attitude in terms of being willing to do whatever it takes to monitor the fishery, to look at the fish encountered and all that stuff, this wouldn't be worth doing. I wouldn't recommend that we go anywhere with this. But it's because you're stepping up and you're saying, we will do what it takes to make sure that we monitor our fisheries, that we get real-time information in, that we can have, you know, as ironclad of accountability for the catch and reel and the number of fish that we're encountering. That's what makes this possible, and it's what makes me want to do everything that we can to help make it happen. It's because of that. If you weren't willing to do that, and if you weren't here saying we will do whatever it takes to help make sure that happens, I wouldn't be recommending we go forward, because I don't think we're going to get a permit without that.
I have two quick questions for the director. Is that okay?
Let's do that offline. Right. Because we have a lot of people who are going to be wanting to talk with us. Thanks so much. But Commissioner Smith had something.
As a participant of that fishery in my kind of backyard, I echo what the director said. Your willingness and collectively to participate in this fishery is what we need. I mean, and it's very frustrating. If you do cut a corner, as the director said, and we run into what we see with the Wild Fish Conservancy, that just takes time and money away from, in my estimation, what needs to be done on this. So it's an unfortunate thing, but that's how it is. But you have our pledge to that, you know, as a neighbor, as a user, to want to see that as well. So.
Okay. We have a couple more from the Occupy Skagit group. Charles Sullivan, come forward.
This will be quick. Last night I did my bills. It's a really thrilling, exciting time. Luckily, there was some left over, and so at the end of the month, if something's left over, we put some in the wife's accounts. I put some in my accounts, and I was looking at it as I put it in my account, and the name on the account's kind of interesting for a guy in Bellingham. It's BC Fishing, because that's where we go. And I was happy with the amount of money there, and I'd much rather spend it in Skagit. You know, every year we go to BC to fish. You know, it's $400, $300, $400 in licenses, BC gas, and a lot of paid time off. So really the choice is, do I spend my money in America, or do I spend it in Canada? And I'd much rather spend it in America. But at this point, I can't. There's no sense to go to the peninsula. There's no sense to go really anywhere in Washington State where I'm at, other than the Skagit. And that's my point. And so I'd like, I'd hope that we could prioritize it as much as we could. So thank you.
Thank you. Steve Franson.
Good morning, Director Anderson, Chair Wecker, Commissioners. My name is Steve Franson. I live here in Olympia, and I am here to support the Occupy Skagit movement, I guess, if that's what it has amounted to at this point. I'm very pleased to hear what Director Anderson had to report for the update. It's hard to, almost bitter to say, but that's the best news we've heard thus far. So good news is good news. But it causes me to reflect on the irony just momentarily. If the Skagit River were a tributary to Willapa Bay this morning, we'd be here clamoring to kill two-thirds of that run. and it just is not how it is. I mean, the Skagit has become a resource that's kind of unique in this state as salmonid fisheries go, where there is no directed harvest. Nobody's even asking for directed harvest, even the treaty tribes in the Skagit Basin. They need an increased incidental take level in order to more effectively have their salmon fisheries, directed salmon fisheries. We're looking at the relatively benign impacts of a catch and release season that successfully occurred for over 30 years on the Skagit, and in the status report by NIMS is not a factor affecting the stock size. I mean, the Skagit had a bad return in 2009. Marine survival goes up, it goes down. That's the way anadromous fisheries are. They do not stay the same. And so we've had three consecutive years where the returning run size has exceeded the escapement guideline of 6,000 spawners, but there's no fishing. So it's like back to, if not 2015, when? Maybe 2016? Maybe, you know, why? Well, I want to mention a discrepancy, though, with respect to getting a Puget Sound steelhead harvest management plan assembled and run through the approval process and all the way through the EIS. With respect to Puget Sound Chinook, the management plan has been over a decade in the making, and it does include river basin by river basin individual management plans for each Chinook stock of each major Puget Sound tributary. But I think it's important to point out in this context, nobody ever stopped fishing for Puget Sound Chinook. Where there's a will, there's a way. So even year by year, however it goes on, no one has discontinued the Puget Sound Chinook fishery. Imagine the backlash if there was no Puget Sound Chinook fishing until it all ran through the process. Here we're talking about fishing on a healthy steelhead run with no directed take.
Thank you. Rich Sims. That mic. Yeah.
Good morning, Commissioners, Director Anderson. My name is Rich Sims, founding board member of the Wild Steelhead Coalition. Thanks for the opportunity to provide testimony. 2014 marks the 10-year anniversary of the Commission's request to develop the statewide steelhead management plan. In 2004, after much debate resulting in the overturn of wild steelhead harvest moratorium, the Commission sent a request to the WDFW director for the department to develop a statewide steelhead management plan to be the guiding policy in managing, conserving, and restoring wild steelhead runs in the state of Washington. Finally, in 2006, the department began working with stakeholder groups to develop the plan. During that time in 2007, NOAA listed wild steelhead in Puget Sound DPS as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. In 2008, after thorough review and testimony, the plan was finally adopted and approved by the department and the commission. The Wild Steelhead Coalition was involved from the beginning, and we were encouraged that a plan was finally in place to start making the needed changes and recovery strategies for wild steelhead. It has been 6 years since the adoption of the SSMP, and we are concerned about the slow progress made to the point that it already needs updating to reflect the realities of today. We request our commission to review the SSMP and help break down the barriers and the politics to implement the plan. The north and south coast of the Olympic Peninsula are the only DPS in our state that have not been listed, but they are a fraction of their historical abundance, some inconsistent in meeting their escapement numbers, and are put under tremendous pressure by both the tribes, intense angling pressure by an unsustainable number of displaced anglers and guides from other closures and upswelling interests outside our state. These rivers are on the verge of collapse, determined by analysis of developed regression models. If we do not start making changes today, we'll soon follow a path of another ESA listing. The SSMP needs to be taken seriously as one of the strategies to help turn this trend around. I believe 2015 will be an opportunity to put forth progressive rule proposals to help conserve and rebuild wild steelhead, along with stronger agreements with the tribes. Please use your authority as the commission to make wild steelhead conservation a stronger priority. Personally, I want to support the ability to have a CNR season on the Skagit. If the numbers are above escapement, this year they're expected to have 9,130 fish return. This will provide some relief on the North Coast streams. I personally believe that anglers are an important advocate for the conservation of the resource. If we continue to lose opportunities, we'll lose advocates for wild steelhead. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, too. Jack Hollingsworth, come forward, please.
Good morning, Commission. I want to speak a little about the Grays Harbor Management Plan. And it was given credit for a huge run of coho in the Chehalis Basin this year, but I don't think it deserves all the credit. As far as our season, I'd like to say what it did for our state-managed gillnet fishery. We had some openings in Area 2C that were so late in the season that if you look on the computer harvest, it's zero. There was not a salmon landed by our fishery in the Hump Tulips area. After waiting for the tribe to wrap up their coho fishery, we finally got a few days scheduled in Area 2A, 2D, the Chehalis River. Our first opener, we got in the water after a rather large rain event that pushed most of the coho above our fishing area, and we had a rather dismal catch harvest. The first day we fished, we did catch some fish, but the openings after that were very poor. Our later openings coincided with more large rain events that littered the bay with huge amounts of logs, limbs, debris that severely curtailed our fishery and our harvest. In short, the three-day-per-week net closure that the management plan has crippled our fishery. If you look back at the total days netted in the Chehalis system by the tribe and the state-managed fishery, 2014 produced the most days netted in the month of October, which is the prime coho catch period, that we've had in years. A huge run of coho is the reason that there were so many fish in the Chehalis Basin. Over 50,000 coho entered the various hatchery facilities in the upper areas, and approximately 6,000 are needed for hatchery escapement. The same results were shown on the whole coast. Willapa had over 70,000 surplus coho at their hatchery facilities, and Bonneville Dam recorded over 2.5 times the 10-year average on coho. As commercial fishermen, we are not advocates to harvest down to the last salmon. We just want a fair shake. And the current plan does not do this. Thank you.
Thank you. Butch Smith. Yeah, if you want everyone to see it.
Happy holidays, Commission and Director Anderson, Madam Chair. My name is Butch Smith. I'm here today. I'm from Elwaco, Washington. I'm president of the Elwaco Char Association. I'm also on the Port Commission, and I've been asked to come from the city of Elwaco today. Today I want to speak on kind of the post-sturgeon that took place in 2014. Elwaco is a town. It's a fishing community. You don't go to Elwaco to drink wine or eat at a restaurant or walk on the mud flats. You come to fish, and both industries are equally as important to our area. But last year, 2014, this last season, we had a closure on white sturgeon. And some of the thinking was when we closed it, we'll do catch and release, and that will make up. What you're seeing passed around is a picture not taken last week which that's how it should look like in Elwaco, in the sport, into the dock. You're looking at Memorial Saturday, Memorial Weekend Saturday, 2014. I've been charter fishing for 41 years. I've missed two Memorial Saturdays in my lifetime, both to weather and, of course, this year to the closure of sturgeon. It has a dramatic effect. 2013, there were over 40,000 angler trips taken for sturgeon. 2014, there were 2,700. I'm just here to tell you that I have had the report that you're going to get with the smelt coming back 3 or 4 years a row, great numbers, really good indications on population of keeper size, that we need to do what we can to try to get some kind of retention fishery this year on the coast. Our rural communities are reliant on sport fishing as well as commercial, but it's devastating. We had 4 restaurants in 2013 at the Port of Elwaco. We're down to a half of one. Not all because of the sturgeon closure. I'm not going to come up here and state that to you, but a good portion, a good reason, a good part of why they had to close up. So I know this is the beginning of the sturgeon process. I understand that, and myself and the people I represent are certainly rolled up their sleeves and ready to go to work. As you know, when you close the fisheries down, you just don't turn a light switch on and bring everybody come roaring back like it kept going. It's not going to be the same as it was when you had a continuous catch and keep. So I'm just here. You're going to see, unfortunately or fortunately, you're going to see more of me again with the sturgeon topic, and I look forward to working with the commission and staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Chair. Butch, I understand the dilemma. You sent that picture to me last June. And from a timing perspective, when does your community need to have, because everything has to happen in advance to some degree, what kind of a timeline are you working with in your mind?
Well, thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. The sooner the better. I mean, the sports show season is ready to start. The promotion season, people have to get their vacations in to put in time to come down with their sport boats or go charter fishing. I certainly would not like to see this drug out clear through the last of March before we make a decision. I understand we can't make a decision January 1st, but it is very important the earliest that we possibly can do this. There's also in commission policy, as I've read it, and I could be wrong. I hope I don't misspeak, Madam Commission Chairman. But you also can give the authority to the director if you feel comfortable that there's harbor, and that would help expedite things also once you were comfortable with the staff report and the numbers and what have you. Thank you.
Alan Hollingsworth, please come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, commission members. I too would like to speak on Grace Harbor policy that we started to process exactly 1 year ago. And in my opinion, it didn't work last year. So far, as of last week, we had 51,600 surplus hatchery coho. It's the largest wild coho run I can remember in 54 years. I would estimate that you could have as many as 200,000 this year. Escapement goal is around 35,000. The 4 days on, 3 days off didn't work. Caused large imbalances in the catches. The catches I have off the internet yesterday was for the non-treaty was 15 hatchery Chinook, 5,471 coho, 2,614 chum, and zero in the, that was in Chehalis caught fish, zero in the Hump Tulip site. The Quinault catches, which are a month old, they haven't updated for a month, they had 5,134 Chinook, 58,138 coho and 8,000 8,597 chum. That's their total catch for both North and South Bay. My brother alluded to missing some days because of flood conditions, and also a couple days we had that strong east wind, freezing weather. Several fishermen didn't fish. The season didn't open until most of the early coho was up the river. The first 3 weeks of October is prime coho time, and the non-treaties missed all that. And also, I heard reports, but I didn't get it confirmed, that when the Quinault Indian Nation found out that the state fishery was going to be cut way back, they was going to add 25 new fishermen to the Chehalis. I haven't had that confirmed that they actually did do it, but that was their proposal. So any fish that the non-treaty fishermen didn't catch, the Quinaults would have most likely taken them. One thing I would like to see is we go back and review the policy for Grace Harbor and make some changes. I think one thing that should be done is check into use of 50-fathom set nets like the tribes use. They fish up on the bank of the river, miss out on most of the Chinook, and they catch coho and chums. That's something that the non-treaties could do because they're limited to a very small portion of the Chinook run. Also, I would like to see something done to the by the department to put harbor seals and sea lions, change the Marine Mammal Act, so in the state of Washington something could be done to control them. They're way overpopulated, and it won't be long, and they're going to take way more than what the fishermen are going to be catching. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Commissioner Kehoe.
As I recall, our commission policy did specifically provide for an annual review of the Grace Harbor policy.
So. Yeah. I was going to ask the director, what's the timeline for an annual review?
The February meeting, we will have a report on the outcome of the 2014 season with the commission policy in place.
Okay. Thank you. Heath Heikela.
Good morning, Chair Wecker, Director Anderson, the rest of the commissioners. Happy holidays. Natural resource issues and fisheries in particular are not for the faint at heart, so appreciate that you guys strap up every weekend here to come in here and do this, so appreciate it. I thought I'd start with the budget, just kind of express our gratitude for the budget policy that was adopted in September. I think it makes a lot of sense. I've spent a lot of time getting into the budget over the last month or so and looking at just kind of where the revenue is coming from and where it's going to be coming from. I know how important the meeting the shortfall that you guys are facing is, both on the recreational side. As you know, I've sent these numbers around. The recreational sector is providing over $71 million in revenue to the department each biennium, by far the largest source of revenue for the department. So we will continue to work. We're trying, as you know, to make sure that the budget reflects continued push towards reforms towards improving recreational fisheries, so we can have more license sales rather than more expensive licenses. So continue working with you guys as we get into the legislative session on that. The other issue I wanted to mention was sturgeon. So last year we were in here and recommended that the department take a very cautious approach given some of the data. Very sympathetic to some of the issues that I think Mr. Smith raised in his testimony. There may be some encouraging signs in terms of the legal population of sturgeon. I think there is still a real problem in sublegal and oversized sturgeon populations when you look at it. For the third year in a row, fallen short of the conservation threshold. threshold for oversized sturgeon. Those are obviously your breeding population. It's your source for your young sturgeon, and looking at it, young sturgeon are not doing well at all in terms of the young of the year surveys. So if it's not directed harvest, then it has to be something else that is impacting the reproduction, the oversized sturgeon. I would recommend, I won't be able to be here for the briefing. I have to go to my daughter's soccer game later today. But I have reviewed the materials from the briefing. I will note that under bycatch, it says that there's materials included in attachment one. There are no materials on that. I would encourage the commission over the next month, as you're looking at this, to consider what effect bycatch is having on sturgeon. 2012, that data had 660 oversized sturgeon and 18 days of commercial gillnet fishery that were caught as bycatch. Probably since 2012, we've actually doubled the number of days of gillnetting in the main stem because of very large fall Chinook and summer Chinook runs. So I think you ought to look at what effect that's having. If we continue to move towards alternative gear, and you can do that now in zones 4 and 5, even with those high mortality rates, because it's not catch and release up in zones 4 and 5, that may, you know, reduce some of the pressure on the sturgeon. So
thank you.
My time's up. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the open public input item.